Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions. Right here, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Scheduled to be joined shortly by Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel. We're looking forward to that conversation, talking all things Tennessee Vols. We've got Adam Bingen coming up at 9:30 as well. Another big win last night for the Nashville Predators. They get it done 3-2 against Vegas, and they are right now in first place in the Central Division as well. So lots to get into with Adam Bingen coming up a little bit later in the show as well. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Speaking of thoughts on the text line, I got a texter that says, I don't understand, or he says, I feel like people are looking at King Henry like he's the greatest running back in the league. Headed to the Hall of Fame, can't win a Super Bowl without him, but simultaneously gets rusty and forgets how to run after 2 months. I get wanting to rest the foot, but the rust part is just crazy to me.
I think that's a good way to look at it.
He didn't do anything in the preseason. He knows what he's doing. And as far as there's also the game shape question, TD asked that question. Yesterday, Tony Deuce, who got a ton of Derrick Henry questions yesterday. And there's that too. There's like game shape, but again, like don't you expect Derrick Henry to be in tip top shape? I mean, you think like someone wants to see Derrick Henry, he's going to come out there like a little spare tire and like, oh man, got to take a break here after a couple of carries. You know, I'm sure even with a broken bone or a surgically repaired bone in his foot, he's probably been, you know, doing chin-ups on semis or, I don't know, lifting, you know, entire, you know, cabinets and whatever. I mean, he's going to be in shape. He's going to be – and he knows what he's doing. So, I agree. I think it's like you get into a game, you take some hits, you get into the flow of the game, and I think you're probably going to be Derrick Henry.
I would say so. I got, you know, there's people maybe you worry about, not even really that much in professional sports anymore about staying in shape. Derrick Henry is – probably the last person on the list I worry about not being in shape. I think he's going to be fine as you move forward. Now, is there something to you've not been in game action and not seen game speed for a while? Maybe. But again, like I go back to, you know, we talk about banked reps. I think he's going to be just fine. He's carried the football a lot of times for this team. We'll continue the discussion on Derrick Henry and the Titans throughout the show here today on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Right now, let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Mike, what's going on? How are we doing?
Doing well this morning. Thank you guys for having me on.
Well, thanks for coming on with us. Mike, how many times in the last week has the term forward progress come up to you?
You know, I'm in basketball season mode, so it hasn't come up as often as it probably has for a lot of folks. That, certainly in the probably 24 hours after that game in Nashville, it came up a good bit. But, yeah, I've made my forward progress on the basketball season since then.
Very nicely done. Well, one football question for you, Mike. What do you make overall of not only the way the Music City Bowl went, but just Josh Heupel's first season? Now that it's complete, the bowl game is done. Overall, how do you feel about Josh Heupel and his first season, and how do you think Tennessee fans should feel as they move forward now with him?
Yeah, I think any way you look at the season, Heupel did more with a lot less than what I think many would have expected. You look at this time a year ago, you know, Jeremy Pruitt was fired about two weeks from now will be the one-year mark, and the roster just completely turned over, basically. So Heupel walked in and inherited a roster that didn't have a ton on it, but made it a better team than what it was with all those other pieces. So So I think any way you look at it, it was a good season for Tennessee. Making a bowl game was a great step despite the outcome in that bowl game. But yeah, I think there's got to be a lot of optimism moving forward, especially with Hendon Hooker and Cedric Tillman returning. Certainly the offensive line and a lot of pieces on the defense have to be figured out moving forward to develop more consistency there. But yeah, I think you saw a good product in the first year.
All right, how about Rick Barnes' team? I must say, Mike, I like it. I really like it with all of a sudden you go from last year really not having a true point guard. Now you have two, and I know they're both freshmen, but one of them, you know, is special. And actually, I think you told me going into the season, like, watch out for this Sakai Ziegler kid, and boy, is he fun to watch. I feel like they have – a lot of ingredients to do something big this year. Am I being too optimistic?
They do. I still think figuring out what it looks like in the post is part of that process, but that's kind of been a question mark all season and will largely continue to be. Olivier Kamwa has shown, I guess, the last couple bigger games that he can do more, not just in the, you know, the USC Upstate, Tennessee Tech type opponents, but against high-level opponents. But to me, the thing that can carry this team is that defense. And I was curious how the defense would look going into this season. I mean, you lose an Eve Pons, and it's really interesting to see what that's going to look like just from an athletic prowess and shot-blocking ability that he had. But this team defensively is better than last year's team, despite, from my point of view, not really having maybe more than one true above-average individual defender in Josiah Jordan James. So what Mike Schwartz has done coaching this team's defense is incredible, and I think that's what gives them a chance to have a good year.
So, Mike, for those who have not seen Kennedy Chandler play yet for Tennessee, what sort of a player is he? What can they expect when they watch him as SEC play continues to go for the Vols, including tonight against Ole Miss?
Yeah, I think my go-to comment about Chandler is that he makes like five plays a game that might as well be his declaration for the NBA draft. there's just so many little special things that he does. Very savvy with the ball in his hands, whether that be shooting it or passing it. I mean, he's a must-watch player, and that's certainly what you expect when you sign the number one point guard in the country, and that's what he's been. Had some ups and downs here and there, just, you know, dealing with being a freshman, playing for Rick Barnes, the things that are demanded of him. But, I mean, there's just a few plays every game that are really special. And he's shown he's a better shooter, I think, than some people thought he was coming in. Really worked on that the final couple years of high school. So, really, really a well-rounded basketball player.
I want to go back to the defense thing, Mike, because you say they're better. It's really interesting, even because I think Pons was such – he erased so many mistakes. I thought last year, I mean, right around this time, we were talking about, wow, is this the best defensive team in college basketball? They had played some high-level games, and it looked like that. And then I just don't totally understand what exactly happened. I think some of it was that you have freshman wings who, like, were very inconsistent from game to game, and Eve Pons can only do so much. But why do you think – it is better? Because James is the constant. He was there last year. He's there this year. Maybe Vescovi now doesn't have to guard the opposing point guard as much. But what do you think has allowed that to happen? Because I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, I was skeptical about this team's defense going into the year. Just looking at it again on paper, not really seeing how it worked. I think the difference is there. Santiago Vescovi really changed his body in the offseason. He's so much quicker on the perimeter that he's no longer that liability that he was last year, where players could get by him and deal with him easily. He's staying in front of people. He's making a difference on the perimeter. I also think Olivier Kamwa's athleticism has helped overcome some of that, because he's pretty good at getting out on ball screens. He's quick enough laterally to get back into the post on his guy pretty well. So I think those two guys have really helped the team defense work the way it is. And I think, too, Kennedy Chandler has been pretty good on the ball at times. And he's kind of a pest. He forces turnovers, creates steals, did a lot of that against Arizona in Tennessee's win back in December. So I think it's just players really buying into the scheme, buying into the system, and playing well into it. Because, yeah, you lose an Eve Pond, it's really hard to know what it's going to look like. But it's been a pretty impressive group defensively this year.
Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike, how do you put into words what John Fulkerson means for this group, not only on the floor and what he brings to the table there, but really from a leadership standpoint as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a cliche assessment, but he is the heartbeat of the team. And he, I mean, he's in his sixth year. He's beloved by the fan base. He's beloved by the coach. He's beloved by his teammates. He's just an integral piece of everything that is Tennessee basketball. You know, he was our sports person of the year, not this year, but last year at Knox News, just because of the impact that we've all seen him make around the program, in it, and in the community. Just a pretty good kid that's affected things well. So everyone at that program gravitates toward him on and off the court. And I think that's why you see that, and seeing him have that success against Arizona, where it's not just he affects them as a person, but he can still make dominant plays and have big-time games against big-time teams. I thought that was huge for Tennessee, just as a statement that they've got a post player who can really take over a game still, and they're not going to be 100% reliant necessarily on a three-point shot this year.
Yeah, the way they defended them and the way he attacked them, facing up, spinning, it kind of reminded me of that Kentucky game a couple years ago. We didn't see too much of that last season. So how do you look at the SEC race, Mike? Really big one last night, although Kentucky lost some guys early. You know, obviously Wheeler, that's a huge loss in that game at LSU. But I think both those teams are obviously very good. Auburn looks really good right now. Where do you think Tennessee fits into that?
Yeah, I think Tennessee's right there in that top four group in the conference, and you kind of named those other ones there. Alabama right there as well, obviously, but Alabama was my preseason favorite, but they haven't been very consistent. You know, a couple good wins, but a couple bad losses as well. But Auburn, I was high on Auburn going into the year, but apparently not high enough, because that team to me right now is the favorite with what they do on both ends of the court. They're incredibly dominant, both offensively and defensively. LSU to me might be the surprise, just because it's a different brand of basketball they're playing. I mean, Will Wade's teams have kind of been score the ball, defense is optional at LSU, but this team's guarding the ball at a very high clip, and that's certainly changed what they can do. And we kind of know what Tennessee is. Also a very good defensive team, and a team that does need some three-point shots to go down to be exactly what it wants to be. But yeah, those are those teams that are in that mix right now, I think, for the title contention.
Strong-ass defense, Mike. Strong-ass defense.
That's right. Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Mike, great stuff. Happy New Year to you. Appreciate you taking time to come on with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. Mike Wilson does a great job covering the Vols for the Knoxville News Sentinel. We'll come back. We got more of your thoughts to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Adam Bingen coming up at 9:30 as well. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, join us for Smashville Live tonight on 102.5 The Game with special guest former Nashville Predator Darcy Hordachuk. The show will air on Wednesdays during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m., featuring Preds players, former players, and other special guests. You can watch the show via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and Twitter. So be sure to join us this hockey season for Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Scheduled to be joined by Adam Vingen coming up at 9:30. We'll get his thoughts on another big win for the Nashville Predators last night against Vegas. They win 3-2. They are in first place in the Central Division. We'll get his thoughts on that coming up at 9:30. Going back to our Derrick Henry discussion, Dennis texting in says, Derrick Henry is going to come out of the tunnel looking like Fat Thor. He's just been taking time off, looking like Fat Thor coming out of the tunnel. I'd be surprised if that's the case.
Oh, my God, that's outstanding. Fat Thor. We changed the cable's not working. Yes. Oh, my God, that's outstanding. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure Derrick Henry's just been sitting around, you know, eating some chocolate. You know, God. Speaking of which, I've been eating so many of those Reese's cup things. Like, how many different kinds of Reese's cup things can you possibly manufacture?
The most, you know, elite candy ever.
That's a Reese's answer cup. Continues to grow.
Well, I agree. The original Reese's cup, elite. But there's all these like other types, and I eat them all. Derrick Henry probably doesn't.
Maybe get some like Saban sends him some, you know, oatmeal cream pies, like some Little Debbie stuff. Apparently that's Saban's thing. So maybe got a little care package from Nick.
Well, it used to be Saban's thing was that and a cigarette, but I think it's probably just the oatmeal cream pie now. Yeah.
Just gotten rid of that. Matthew from Paris texting in says, someone needs to correct Stephen A. Smith when he said the Titans were done when Henry got hurt. Now they have the one seed and are ready for the playoffs. It never fails. The media are quick to talk about things they know nothing about. He needs to stick to basketball. I'm glad Robbie and Rex Road and Darren Donica Chase can let us know the truth. This coming from Matthew in Paris.
Well, that's nice, Matthew. But, like, I mean, honestly, I think we kind of had the reaction of, like, if he's done, they're not going to make Super Bowl. And to be fair to Stephen A., his own top newsbreaker at his place of employment is telling everybody that Derrick Henry's done. That's the guy you yell at. The guy you yell at is the guy who tried to report definitively that Derrick Henry was done when everybody else and all other reporting was like, no, they actually are optimistic they could get him back. Like Adam Schefter, like calling, you know, who the hell knows to get that information. That's ridiculous.
And radio silence from Adam Schefter on it ever since. It's just amazing how it just fades into the darkness.
I mean, why do you do it? That's not going to affect him, but like that's you attacking your own credibility.
Right. And look, Schefter gets a lot of things right, obviously. And we kind of gone into
some of the
reasons why that's the case. But that's a bad look, bro. Adam Schefter, the Derrick Henry stuff.
I mean, just you and Rappaport just go do one of those little sumo wrestling things. You put on those little sumo things and roll around with each other and get it all out of your system and then, you know, stop doing stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. Big question for this game on Sunday is with A.J. Brown back in there and A.J. Brown back in there healthy, you know, he had 5 targets last Sunday, only 2 catches for 41 yards. And it was pretty clear Miami was going to try to take him away as much as possible. You know, the Derrick Henry discussion of whether or not he's going to play will continue to kind of get into this week coming up on Sunday against Houston. But either way, I mean, A.J. Brown, I would expect him to get the ball early and often in that game against Houston because, as we've seen, he could be quite the weapon for this team. And, you know, I think it's important for he and Tannehill to really establish some momentum as they head into the playoffs because – look, I just hadn't had a whole lot of reps together this year. And it's been just a mess of a year at wide receiver for this team.
Well, you may disagree with this or even laugh at this, but I think this is a big week for Julio Jones. He's back active. He's had another stretch of, you know, rest in the hamstring. And there's still a need. You know, like Westbrook Akina obviously is a guy who they count on. He's going to be on the field a lot in the playoffs, but there's still a need for another receiver to step into that void a little bit and take a little bit of heat off A.J. Brown. And he's by far still the most likely candidate for as average as he has looked lately when he's played. I still think there's more there. To quote Kevin Byard, still think there's more meat on the bone there with Julio Jones as a playmaker, not maybe the Julio Jones we all remember. But I think that's a big deal this week. Instead of getting Derrick Henry's rust off, get Julio Jones's rust off, get both of those two receivers working together, give the ball to Deontay Foreman and, you know, win by 17 points or so.
Just better put those hamstrings in bubble wrap this week for Julio Jones as he walks out there to the field. Just make sure them things are ready to go. At least you don't have to worry about the cold weather down at NRG Stadium in Houston.
That's true. It'll be interesting to when they actually play in the playoffs, I mean, it could be a snowy, fortress or like 72 that day. Who the heck knows?
Chris texting in says, Derrick Henry probably eats nails for breakfast while the rest of us are eating donuts. That could be the case. I can neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah, I don't feel like Yeah, I don't feel like Derrick Henry's physical condition is going to be. I mean, game shape. That's, are you ready to come right out and take 30 hits and do what you do so often at defenses? Maybe not. But like, are 10 carries at Houston gonna make that gap up? I think it's probably just going to be like the first time you do it, you'll get used to it. If he even does that, and maybe the plan is just to scale it back regardless. I don't know.
Would it surprise you at all, though, if the plan is, all right, he's full go, give him the ball 25 times a game? Because I don't know that that would surprise me.
No, I do think, like, if his first action is in the playoff game, I figure you would probably see a first half where you'd probably see some Foreman and you'd see some Henry, right? And then it's like, if depending on what they're seeing from Henry, then you could see where it's like, you know, he's got like 7 carries going in the fourth quarter and he ends the game with like 21, you know. Yeah. I could definitely see it playing out like that.
And then we'll see if the tight end position, what that looks like as you move forward. Like you said, I mean, obviously, you know, you don't have any star power at the tight end position. We know that. We've talked about that all year long. You know, I did think it was an encouraging game from Firkser on Sunday. Obviously, Jeff Swaim continues to be somewhat of a factor in the passing game, caught another touchdown pass on Sunday. But, I mean, you do lose Michael Pruitt. That's not an insignificant loss for this Titans team as well when you move forward. I mean, Michael Pruitt has made some big plays for this team this year. He blocks well. So, you know, you might just brush it aside and say, well, it's Michael Pruitt. Who cares? He's a replaceable level player. But that's not an insignificant loss for this team as they move forward here.
No, it's not. And we probably haven't talked enough about it. It's a big loss. He's been reliable. He's been in the system. He blocks. He makes every play in the passing game that you ask him to make all year. It's a big loss. Mike McCartney, NFL agent, last night tweeted, there's the tweet, quote, late night news, pump for tight end Ryan Izzo signing the Titans 53-man roster. So, according to Mike McCartney, his client, Florida State former tight end Ryan Izzo, is, and he says the 53. So, the Titans haven't put anything out on a transaction there, but that appears to be the third guy.
Tyler texting in says, in regards to Henry and Julio playing this weekend, are you concerned about the fact that Houston has a turf field? Could that be a good reason to not play both of them? This is coming from Tyler on the text line. I'm playing Julio. Like, Julio Jones got to get in there and play.
Yeah. I mean, you know, grass is better than turf, but I think you got to play Julio. I do. I think that you need him. You need confidence from him, in him, chemistry, all that stuff. I think this could be a good building game on in terms of the passing game. But and as far as Henry, that's not why I wouldn't play him. But, yeah, sure, throw that onto the pile of reasons that I would not play Derrick Henry Sunday.
When we come back,
just save him for the grass.
When we come back, we'll be joined by our friend Adam Vingan from The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on the Nashville Predators, the red-hot Nashville Predators, now in first place in the Central Division. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And as we do every Wednesday morning at 9:30, it's time to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Adam Vingan from The Athletic, presented by Bank of England Mortgage. Adam, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Good. How are you guys?
We are great. Appreciate Super. You taking time to join us today. So, Adam, another win for the Predators last night. They went 3-2 against Vegas. Right now, they're in first place in the Central Division, which is kind of amazing considering what expectations were heading into the season. We'll get more into that coming up here in just a few minutes. But here we are yet again. Philip Forsberg scores twice last night, including one that was just a ridiculous goal last night by Forsberg, getting around Alex Pietrangelo. He's got 17 goals. He's at over a point per game pace. What do you make of the way he's playing right now? And has that changed your view at all on how the Predators should handle him as he moves forward here, given how extremely productive he's been as of late?
So I was telling Michelle before I came on that I got another tattoo yesterday afternoon, and it clearly says, "I'm sorry, Philip, my bad."
yes.
It does not say that, but I might as well. Look, I can admit I'm a big man. I can admit when I was wrong, and you know, right after Thanksgiving, when I wrote that the Predators should steer clear of re-signing Philip Forsberg, you know, since that point he's been one of the top goal scorers in the NHL. I think since the date that the article published, the only player in the league who has scored more goals than Philip is Austin Matthews. So that's pretty good company. I looked that up this morning, FYI, so that's why I know it.
So are you going to, like, negotiate, you know, part of his contract next time around? Is there, like, a stipend coming your way? What do you think is going on here?
So I know that leading into the Dolphins game, there was a lot of talk, and I know that Joe was clearly on the side of, you know, professional athletes don't need to be motivated by revenge, but I have to imagine that there's some, you know, there's some net somewhere in Phillip's condo with my picture on it that he's just firing pucks into when he's not at the rink. he's clearly very angry. The one thing that I remember about Phillip in terms of what John Hines was looking for from Phillip, and this was early in John's time with the team, was that he wanted Phillip to emphasize his power before his skill. Because we know that Phillip can do some incredibly skilled things. But when you look at the second goal that he scored last night, you know, which, by the way, he started off with a shot block in the defensive zone. You know, he didn't, you know, nutmeg Alex Pietrangelo or anything like that. He simply lowered his shoulder and powered by him. And Alex Pietrangelo is not a small guy. This is not some bum that he burned. I mean, Alex Pietrangelo was one of the first three players named to Canada's Olympic roster before COVID-19 ruined those plans. So, you know, certainly not, you know, some scrub out there that Phillip was doing that to. He was doing that to a premier defenseman in the NHL. And you know, the skill took over at the end when he made that excellent move to score on Logan Thompson. But in order for him to get there, you know, he basically just, you know, like a bull in a china shop. Perhaps he's the fourth honorary member of the herd line in that regard. If he's the bull, I don't know. Anyway, you know, it certainly makes things more interesting. You know, the one thing that's interesting about Phillip coming into this season is we were talking about this competitive transition, right? Competitive rebuild, whatever. You know, Phillip was an advantageous position because he was only committed to it for 1 year. He could look at what was going on and say to himself, this team's not heading in the right direction. I'm in my prime. I don't want to be a part of this. And he could bail. But, you know, think about how well the team is playing. As you mentioned, they're in first place in the Central Division, which absolutely no one expected. He's playing well. Ryan Johansson's playing well. Matt Duchene's playing well. Mikhail Granlund, Roman Josi, UC Saros. You know, they're getting contributions from the quote-unquote secondary players like Jakob Trenin and Tanner Jeannot. You know, there's a lot to like about where this team seems to be heading. So, you know, Phillip might want to be a part of it, and I wouldn't blame him. I mean, currently the team is playing really well, and, you know, if this continues, I would have a hard time imagining Phillip wanting to go somewhere else.
Okay, I've got a few points to make. One, I do believe in motivation. Just, you know, I think the quarterback a little different. I have no doubt.
I don't disagree with your point. I know that you were taking crap for it. You know, I'm a firm believer in the revenge factor. So I'm on your side, Joe.
And Phillip, for maybe not shooting pucks, because that could get messy, but at least maybe a dartboard with Vingan's face. That I could believe. By the way, you and I talked last night. I did 22 predictions for 22, and I'm predicting Philip Forsberg signs with the Edmonton Oilers for $63 million over 7 years in the offseason because the Preds are going to keep him. But I also don't think people are going to be mad about that because of all the things you said. But, Vingan, we've seen
Philip Forsberg go on runs before, you should not be apologetic right now, I don't think. We've seen Philip Forsberg go on absolute heaters where he looks like as dominant a forward as there is in the league, and then there's a month where he looks very much not like that, which could still be coming this season, no?
Oh, for sure, and I would have to look it up because I think that was one of the points that I made, you know, in my original article was that, you know, remember his first game back, which was also against Vegas, he scored twice, and he had a third goal taken away, so he could have had a hat trick. But you know, we've talked part. One of the points in my story was that Philip has this tendency to come and go in terms of his production. I don't think he's gone. As I quickly peruse his game log, he's only gone consecutive games without a point once since returning, and that was the first two games of that road trip to Detroit and New York. So, and that's just with a quick glance. And look, we're all guilty of the contract year, right? Matthew Shane had one hell of a contract year. And it took him a couple of years to justify that contract. I mean, Ryan Johansson had an excellent 2016-17 season, and it got a big contract, and you know he's had to work his way back up too. So yeah, I think you're right, Joe. You're absolutely right. But you know, when I think about where this team, like when I look at how the top players on this team are playing, I don't think it's a fluke. And, you know, that was sort of my thought at the beginning. When Matthew Shane got off to a really hot start and Ryan Johansson too, I was like, well, we'll see what happens. It's only been, you know, 8-10 games. It's been 30-plus games, and they're still playing really well. You know, so that might give me more pause about just saying, well, this is just a contract year surge than, you know, maybe Philip actually finally finding the gear to be a top forward in the NHL.
Adam Vingan on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Adam, you had a great piece come out yesterday at The Athletic about John Hines and kind of the culture that he's established with the Predators, and specifically just kind of the path to get some of his top players there. Without spoiling the entire article, just what's kind of the genesis and the story of John Hines that you came up with at The Athletic?
Well, it'll be 2 years on Friday that the Predators hired John Hines as coach, which means it was 2 years ago tomorrow that they fired Peter Laviolette. And when you think about everything that the Predators as a team have had to endure over these past 2 years with a new coach, you know, think about it this way. In his first calendar year on the job, from January 7th, 2020 to January 7th, 2021, John Hines coached 32 total games, 28 in the regular season before the original COVID-19 pause. Then they were off for 5 months. Then they played four games in the return to play bubble. He did not oversee a full training camp until this past September, you know, nearly a year and a half on the job. And, you know, what I wanted to talk to John about was just those particular challenges and how he grew as a coach over those 2 years. And the one thing that he highlighted was, you know, different ways to communicate and connect with his players, but also understanding there needs to be some give and take. And that's what I sort of, you know, that's what I tried to get into a little bit in the story. We talked about the top players, you know, namely Ryan Johansson, Matthew Shane, and Philip Forsberg. You know, they wanted to be treated like top players. And, you know, John didn't disagree with that notion, but he wasn't just going to give them those responsibilities just because they get paid a lot of money. And I think that's what you're seeing on the ice this year with those three players in particular. I feel like all of the things that he's asked them to do, they've done. And I think when you look at how this team has turned around over the past couple of years, yeah, look, I'm not going to discount the fact that UC Saros is playing out of his mind for the last, you know, 10 months. You know, having amazing goaltending does a lot of good things for your team. But in terms of the attitude of this team, the team's ability to overcome difficult situations, I mean, this was a team that was fragile 2 years ago, that was just waiting for something bad to happen to them in a game. That's not the case anymore. And I think that's a credit to what John has done, and the job that he's done is made all the more impressive because he's had to do it while navigating a pandemic.
Yeah, 2 years feels like about 8 years in real time. But no, and I think, look, I think we'd all agree, other than some real diehard holdouts here on the Hines hating crew, I feel like there's been a lot of change of sentiment that John Hines has earned from this fan base. But let me ask you this, Adam, and actually let me ask both of you guys this. Do you think that given where things are right now, we should also be looking back on David Poyle over the past couple years and thinking differently about what he's done?
That's a good question. And Robbie, I'll let you go first.
Well, I mean, right now they're in first place in the Central Division. The trades that you've made of Ryan Ellis, Victor Arvidsson, they appear to be working out pretty well right now with some young guys coming in. Look, I don't think David Poyle has been perfect. I think there are several moves you can point to really during the time where they were in their window to win a Stanley Cup that did not work and were not good that you don't just forget about. Now, I also think that this transition or competitive rebuild or whatever you want to call it, it looks pretty good right now. The decision to protect Tanner Jeannot in the expansion draft, it looks pretty good right now. So I think the conversation, at least a little bit, definitely has to change on Poyle.
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at back at the offseason, the decision to leave Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson exposed in the expansion draft, the decision to protect Tanner Jeannot over more established players like Cale Yarncroke or Colton Sissons, the decision to trade Ryan Ellis, to trade Victor Arvidsson, we were looking at the roster and, of course, the retirement of Pecorino, which was out of David's control. But when you look at the roster then, you were thinking to yourself, this is a team. And what's interesting is even David Poyle said on multiple occasions that this team was taking a step back. You know, I don't think even he expected this team to be as good as it has been so far this season. You know, I think the decision, you know, the one decision that I think a lot of people are eating crow on is the Tanner Jeannot decision. And I will say, you know, I was listening to our dear friend Jared yesterday before the game, and he said he's 90% there, I think, on apologizing to Tanner Jeannot. 90% only? Remember during that press conference when David Poyle, at least according to everybody on social media, dunked on Jared by saying, "I know more than you do." You know, it looks pretty, we were all a little guilty of scratching our heads at that decision. I personally wasn't as like, "Oh my God, this is the worst thing that David Poyle has ever done." But I was a bit skeptical. But, you know, I think, you know, when you think about the rise of Tanner Jeannot, the rise of Jakob Trenin, you know, the strides that Alex Carrier has made, that Dante Favreau has made, I think you have to be pleased and you have to be careful, as Robbie said. Like, you can't just look at this season and be like, well, all of the things that David Poyle has done wrong are no longer against, you can't hold it against him. But I do think that things look a lot better than we all thought they would.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Joins us every Wednesday morning at 9:30, presented by Bank of England Mortgage. Adam, appreciate you, brother. Great stuff as always.
All right, guys. Be good.
You as well. Thanks, we'll come back. We'll react a little bit to what Adam had to say there. Take your thoughts as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Thanks to Adam Vingan for joining us in the last segment. Joe Rex Road, it is pretty amazing. The Predators, here they sit. We're on January the 5th. I had to look at my phone to figure out that was the right date. January the 5th, they're in first place in the Central Division. No one saw that coming. Philip Forsberg has 17 goals already on the season. He missed 9 games with injury too, and he is just lighting up. I mean, the 2 goals he scored last night, the first one is just a lightning snapshot that's going across your body. Just a great play by him. And then the goal against Pietrangelo last night where he just muscles around him at the blue line. As Adam mentioned, it starts with, you know, a shot block in the D zone. He comes up the ice, muscles around Alex Pietrangelo, which is not an easy thing to do, and then has the wherewithal to cut it back to the backhand and score that goal. I mean, it's just incredible the way that he's playing right now. And that goal last night, definitely the highlight reel of his season so far.
Such an awesome, like, disrespectful goal too. He like just stands in front of the goalie and just pops it in front of him, you know, like just stands there. It's yeah, it's ridiculous, man. Ridiculous stuff. Now, I mean, even the most sunshiny Preds Facebooker who thinks they still have Mike Fisher and Seth Jones on the team did not have them in first place right now.
No, but here they are. They're in first place. It's I mean, look, I know, you know, Vegas didn't have Mark Stone last night, and obviously they were on their third goalie. So it's not like you had a full-strength Vegas team out there last night. That's still a really impressive win on the road. You've got a chance this week against L.A. and Arizona to pile up some more points here. And, you know, you got Colorado coming in on Tuesday. There's lots of big games coming up for this Predators team. And this is going to be fun coming down the stretch. Like, again, you know, we've talked about this at different times this year. I don't know that the Predators are going to finish in first place in the Central Division. I don't know that they're going to be, you know, a top three team even, although with each passing day, it looks more and more likely that could be the case. I have seen enough so far, and I think the sample size is large enough to where I'm pretty darn confident they're a playoff team. I mean, they're a really good hockey team right now, and, you know, they've got a lot of things going right, a lot of guys playing well. And that's not to take anything away from them. That's all really good stuff. That just the way they play is pretty consistent on a night-by-night basis. And, man, they're a fun team to watch right now.
They are. And, look, the Forsberg thing, I'm sorry, but, I mean, I think we've seen enough of Philip Forsberg to expect there to be a dry spell coming, you know, like or an injury, right? So that's one thing, like when he's going like this, enjoy it. I don't think it's realistic to expect it night after night for the rest of the year. But I don't know what else with this team right now would be like in the category of like not sustainable. Is there anything else or anyone else, you know, who are like performing right now at such a level that like, okay, that's going to regress to a certain point. I don't feel like there's a ton of that.
Well, I don't think so either. And, you know, we talked about Jared last segment. If he's right and the floor for Elli Tolvanen is Philip Forsberg, well, that's got to start kicking in pretty soon, right?
Oh, man. Good pull there. By the way, I think Jared will take the L if Tanner Jeannot wins the U.S. Olympic figure skating trials.
Yes.
If Jeannot wins those, then I think Jared will finally take the L on Tanner.
Oh. They're a fun team to watch. Tanner's a fun player to watch. That's, I think, part of what makes this team so fun is they've got guys that are so good at different things. Like, you know, people keep trying to mess with Tanner Jeannot physically, and I'm like, yeah, why don't you stop? You're going to get yourself hurt. You keep trying to fight him. Trennan with another goal last night as well. They got a lot of guys that do a lot of different things. Well, we'll see if the Predators can keep that up later this week. That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Joe, have fun in Knoxville. We'll talk to you then. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.